guys.
Welcome. Hey, welcome to... Oh, I thought... Who's talking?
You go for it.
Oh.
Hey, guys. Welcome to Magic the Amateuring. It's a podcast for people.
Very good.
You really threw me off.
Oh, did I?
You really did. My brain is short-circuiting.
Your circadian
right now.
Rhythms. You're going to go back under the ground for another 15 years.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it looks like it's time to hibernate.
Yeah. You guys, Magic the Amateuring is a show for people, as Megan mentioned, as well as we've mentioned on the show before, aliens, lesser life forms such as slugs, various gases, inert gases.
Yep, higher life forms. If there's any aliens catching this as it's broadcast out into space in 100 years, it's for you too.
But mostly for people who are new to Magic the Gathering, people who are returning to the game, and anybody who likes to have a chuckle, where chuckles come from, the chuckle party zone.
Yep. I call it my diaphragm. But you call it whatever you want to. On the show today, we are going to talk about Oracle text in For the Noobs. We're going to...
Are you still
cow.
Having problems?
Yeah. What is wrong with me, Megan, today? We're going to have a standard corner.
Yes, we are.
Talking all about the SCG Open that was in Minneapolis this past weekend.
Yeah, but Megan.
What?
It's not just you and me on the show this week.
Say what?
No, you might have heard someone chuckling in the corner. It's our special guest, Aaron.
Oh my God. Hey, Aaron.
Hi, I'm literally in a corner too.
Yeah, you are.
You're also in the same room. I don't know how I didn't notice you before.
I have to say, I love this setup, though. I feel like we really are in a slumber party. Like, you're on this day bed, and there's room for three of us, and we're in this quaint little, like, attic bedroom. Yeah. Like, I feel like we should be braiding each other's hair and playing girl talk. And
yeah. Oh, my gosh. Did you play girl talk?
No, I listened to the band Girl Talk.
Oh, okay. I used to play all those games. Girl Talk, Mall Madness was my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Dream
Classic.
Phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I would take those little, you know, those little things that you turn the blinds with, those sticks. You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Aren't they usually attached to blinds?
They are, but there's a little hook at the top where they come off. My brother and I would take those off the blinds and then run around the house and chase each other and try and hit each other with them. Those are the kinds of games I played.
You know what I played?
What?
I like to play devil with my Barbies.
What?
So, like, one of the Barbies would be the devil and would try to tempt the other Barbies down to hell.
Oh, my goodness. And here I thought I had a strange upbringing, you know?
Are you serious?
Yes! I also played strip club with my Barbies and sperm bank. There was only one male Barbie. What were they supposed to do?
You're right.
Because then I think my mom, like, caught me sometime. Like, she's like, what did you just say? I'm like, I'm playing sperm bank. And she's like, how did you know about that? And I was like, Dateline, NBC. True story.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, you guys may recognize Erin from her wonderful show, The Deck Tees.
Indeed.
She does a lot of wonderful interviews with pro players, and you've done, like, some WotC people, right?
Yeah, and I've had fellow podcasters like you.
Yeah.
I had you two and Ben on the show, and I've had bloggers and designers, and everybody's welcome, as long as you're interesting. Yeah.
So they're always super great and really informative, so you should check it out. Erin will give you a couple of places where you can find her podcast and find her at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So listen up, guys.
For the Noobs, Oracle Text.
Oracle Text? What the heck is that?
Megan, why are you asking me? I'm just a dum-dum. That's the kind
Maria, you really underestimate yourself sometimes.
I'm more than just a sucker you can get for about 10 cents at a gas station.
You really are.
Oh, my. So, I get to be the good girl on this podcast. This is rare.
I didn't realize what I said until you laughed at it. Thank you.
Yep.
You can't get a sucker for 10 cents in this economy.
I mean, we don't know about what you do in your spare time, okay?
10 cents?
You just called yourself a dum-dum. It already indicated that you don't have high self-esteem.
I want to ask how many licks it takes now. Just...
Oh my God. Oh, girl. Oh. Oh, ladies.
Yep.
Great start to the show.
So Oracle text is there. So magic has obviously, you know, been around for ages and ages and ages and ages. And they used to be not so hot at writing the text on cards.
20 years to be exact.
Oh, thank you for numbers.
No problem.
And so they used to be just kind of shabby at this job. At one point they were like, wait a second. Like, we've kind of invented some new words that we used to just write whole sentences for. Maybe we should sort of compile or condense all of the text that's on cards and make it all up to date. So that if someone reads an old card and they're like, this doesn't make any sense, we have a new interpretation for them.
For instance, there used to be words on cards like bury.
Yes.
Bury this card.
Yeah.
Like, and if you looked at that today as a new player or someone who's not familiar with that, mm-hmm. you would kind of just be like, what am I supposed to do? Take this out to my backyard and put it under the ground? Like a dog with a bone? Like, that's bizarre. So Wizards was like, okay, hold on. We should probably make a standard across all cards. So what Oracle does is go back and reformat in words. Edit? What's the word I'm looking for?
Reformat?
Conform? Oh, I had it right the first time?
You know, just pick one.
Okay.
I think we're good.
The text, so that it is a standard as it fits magic today.
That's right. And so the place where this will maybe most often come up, or you will hear it, is that you can ask for the Oracle text on a card when you are playing at an event. And that just means... you know, it's not going to come up much on standard cards because it's like, you can read it. Although maybe if the card is written in a different language.
I had that come up yesterday.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Tell us
what
about
happened?
It.
Yeah, there was an opponent I was playing, and I think he had a Japanese or a Korean Abzan charm.
Oh.
And he went to play it, and he's like, well, I'm going to, you know, draw two and lose two life. And I was like, I don't know that it does that because it's still a new set.
Yeah.
Can I get an Oracle, you know, reading on that? So I called over the judge, and he pulled out his phone, and usually they look it up on Gatherer. And then he read to me what the card did and said he can do that. And that's a thing. Too. That's how I run into it the most.
Nice. That makes a lot of sense.
Hold up the train.
Okay, train stopped.
Okay, just what is Gatherer?
Oh, Gatherer is gatherer.wizards.com. And it's like a dictionary or an encyclopedia of every card ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's searchable.
And there's so many ways you can search. You can search by converted mana cost. You can search for less than or greater than converted mana cost. You can search by artist, rarity, set, block. I mean, word even. It's pretty detailed.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And so if you ever just have a few minutes, maybe you're bored at work, I don't know, you should go on Gatherer and just sort of check it out because it's actually pretty neat to see. You know, you can just look through all the old timey cards.
Yeah,
I like to use it for when I know Modo has those flashback drafts every once in a while.
Oh,
I like
yeah.
to see what set there is, so I'm not going into it, you know, completely like, what do these cards do? And you get a feel for, okay, you know, this card works with this, and this is something I might want, and that's a great way to prep for it.
Nice. I have only ever gone into a flashback draft completely blind.
Oh, no.
Oh,
and
yes.
It went really horribly.
Yeah.
What were you drafting?
Zendikar.
Okay.
I had no idea what was going on, you guys.
Whenever I use Gatherer, I always feel like I'm on Star Trek. Like, computer, you know, give me green cards with two converted mana costs. And then it goes, and it spits them out. And sometimes I find myself actually talking to Gatherer as I do it. I know I'm super nerdy, but... And I know it doesn't talk back to me or anything, but I do boop, 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 and I feel
that's
all.
That's amazing.
Trivia question. Who was the voice of the computer on Star Trek?
Majel Barrett.
Very good.
Yeah. Oh,
got
snap.
It.
Bam.
Yeah.
Look at that. Trivia smackdown.
Got there.
Bonus points. Who did she play on the shows? She made multiple appearances.
I've got it.
Maria, say it.
Luxwana Troy.
Oh, all right.
She made an additional appearance on the original series. She was Nurse Chapel.
She was?
Yeah.
Nurse Chapel.
Wow, man. I didn't watch the original.
Is there a tiara in this attic bedroom? Do I get a crown for winning this challenge?
You could put on one of Megan's many fencing medals.
This is going to sound silly, but I recycled my tiara recently. I had a birthday tiara, you guys.
Oh, you did?
That someone gave me for my birthday last year.
Oh, wow.
It was made out of plastic and I recycled it, though.
Wow, you Minnesotans. It's just all about the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we're trying to see if we can get winter to be nice to us.
We sacrifice to the winter gods.
Look at how much we recycled this year, Minnesota. Maybe it won't snow so much.
The one thing I love about your city, that the few times I've been here, is it's amazing to me. I've never seen so many people who live in a city and yet know nothing about it. Where I will ask for directions. I asked for directions yesterday to get to the conference center or the convention center. And one gentleman actually looked at me and I asked him, are you from here? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, okay, great. I'm lost. I need to get here. Can you tell me what this is? And he goes, we have a convention center. And I said, you said you lived here. Like, how do you not know this? And even when we were here for the GP back in May, I remember me and Linneman were trying to get to certain places. And we would, again, stop people on the street. First thing we would say, do you live here? Yes, I've lived here 17 years. Great. Do you know where this restaurant is? I've never heard of that before. Like,
I wonder why that is, but that's so true.
But I feel like I've never experienced that on this scale in other cities. You know, yeah. I've been to Richmond. I was in Philadelphia. I've been all over the place. And you get like the odd person. But for the most part, even if they don't know where it is, they've heard of it.
Yeah.
And it never fails. Like, I'm at a 90% rate here where I ask people mm-hmm. and I just get these blank looks like, I didn't know we had
I think
those.
It's because we hunkered down here.
Yeah, it might be.
In the exactly. winter months when we don't leave our hovel.
Everyone, winter like wipes everyone's memories. So you like, you come out again in spring and everyone's like, where is this place? And it's like, I don't know.
You emerge again exactly. in spring.
Yes, I've learned not to ask for directions here.
Good, because I don't know how to get to the convention center, and I'm going there later. So
Maria has the worst sense of direction.
The best part the best part was last night. So my backup plan in case Mike Linneman couldn't host me was I was going to go get a room at the W, which is one of my favorite hotels. And I go out to the convention center, and of course they have a line of cabs. I get in the cab, and I'm like, I'd like a cab to the W, please. And then he goes, there's a $5 minimum. And I'm like, how close is it? And it was literally two blocks down. I didn't even know. I just assumed it was far away. And he's like, it's literally down the street. And I'm like, oh, here's my $5. Thanks. And felt like such a moron.
That's amazing. That's like, I went to Toronto once. I was going to, for the Toronto Improv Festival. And so my friend and I, like, flew into Buffalo and then took the mega bus from Buffalo to Toronto because it's like $8 billion cheaper than flying to Canada.
Literally
yeah. $8 billion. Anyway, so we like get off the mega bus and we're going to a hotel and we get into a cab and we're like, oh, we're going to this hotel. And he's like, is this a joke?
You were at the hotel?
Is this a joke?
And we were like, no. And he points. And it's catty corner. You can see the hotel from where we're sitting. Like, we had to cross the street and then cross the street.
Oh, my God.
And then we were there.
Nice.
Oh, what were we talking about?
Oracle text.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking about Oracle text.
So you mentioned, like, it might be somebody might call for a ruling in, like, maybe a vintage or legacy.
It's not even a ruling. It's just sort of can you tell me exactly what this card does? Because what it says on the card is
weird.
Not clear.
Yeah. Okay, so let's give an example of an old card with some old Oracle text that sounds like somebody barfing up breakfast, which was alphabet cereal.
I had Lucky Charms this morning. Anyways.
You did?
Okay, it's the off-brand
amazing.
Version.
Okay.
But marshmallow
did it come
ladies?
In a bag?
Yes.
Oh,
it's
Megan.
In a giant bag. So this actually is one of when we were talking about the people tweeting the derpiest cards at us.
Oh, we got some great derp.
Mm-hmm. There were some very derpy cards. And this one came from RW Bladewing on Twitter. He tweeted reverse polarity at us. Which is
are
white,
you sure
white.
This is a man?
Oh, no, you're right.
Ooh.
I'm not. His photo is a tank.
Click on the name.
Which made me think it was a man.
This is the reason women don't play magic.
But
we just
can't
my
make
assumption.
You know, we can't
my
make
assumptions.
This assumption. I don't know.
No, you're right. I don't know. It doesn't say. Just that whomever this is lives in Buffalo, New York.
Okay.
I'm just saying a tank makes me think of men.
I don't know. I've seen some tank-like ladies, and I love them. I'm just saying.
That's totally
like my friend
fair.
My friend Jamie on Twitter, Jaren, she's big old girl. She'll kick your butt.
Nice.
Yeah, she's in like all these Spartan runs, and she's, I don't mess with her.
Yeah, she will run me over like a tank.
Margaret Thatcher, notoriously tank-like, nickname, The Tank.
Mm-hmm. Was her nickname really The Tank?
No.
Okay.
Wasn't she the Iron Lady?
Yes.
She
was. That's why I thought of it, I think.
It's not a big leap. I mean, Iron Tank.
No, exactly.
The Iron Lady is what I call my toilet.
Do you have an iron toilet?
Yes, it's out of necessity.
Wow.
That's a step away from Iron Maiden. Like, yeah. Are there spikes on the lid? And when you close the lid?
It's like...
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So reverse polarity is from Revised, and it costs white. And the original, it's an instant. The original text says, all damage done to you by artifacts so far this turn is retroactively added to your life total instead of subtracted. Further damage this turn is treated normally.
What?
It says... so the card, the oracle text says, you gain X life, where X is twice the damage dealt to you this turn by artifacts.
Is that the one with the creepy doll art, where it kind of looks like a doll?
Or look
like
at it. No, it's weird.
It's
really
like
weird.
Some weird Viking.
Okay, I was thinking of something else.
Drawing like a mace.
Yeah, that's
like,
Doug Shuler, isn't it?
No, it's Justin Hampton.
Okay, I was thinking of another artist. But
so, as you can hear, the new text, which has been revised, makes much more sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Than that nonsense.
They retroactively.
Yeah, I love that.
I'm surprised they didn't, you know, go further and put surreptitiously on a card somewhere. Yeah. Draw two and surreptitiously discard one.
So we were talking about Barry before, which has been turned into exile.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In this day and age, I just realized we never explained that. But it used to say Barry. Now it says exile.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because didn't Barry used to be destroy and can't be regenerated? I could have sworn
it
was different.
You're right. Hold on. Let's see.
Yeah, I should probably.
I should search for. Yeah, we'll search for a card that says Barry. So right now I'm searching, and you can search for. You can just search by text.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you can search for text. You can search for flavor text, even like when we were in the community cup, and I know for Athreos we would just search Athreos, and they were cards that just had him in the flavor text. Like one of the cards was Aegis of something, that hexproof one from the Theros set, and. It didn't have Athreos anywhere but the flavor text. It breaks it down even like that.
What? Why is this being so...
You might just have to googs.
Oh, I might have... I might have to clear my whatchamadoodle. You know what I'm saying.
Dump your cookies.
Dump those cookies, Megan.
Okay, hold on.
Google that when gather is a butthole.
All right, here we go. We'll just read the MTG Salvation Wiki.
Hey, I love that.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Another great place if you're ever looking for information.
I also particularly like Salvation for characters. Like, if I want to know more about Planeswalkers, like I looked up Yugen there, Sarkhan there, because that will also cover the comics, which I didn't even know were a thing. So there are things I've learned about existing Planeswalkers that I didn't know who Dak Faden was. So I go there more for Vorthos things, but still great all around.
Yeah, which is actually pretty sweet. I like that stuff. So Bury, parentheses, obsolete. a term that meant put a permanent into its owner's graveyard. In general, cards that were printed with the term Bury have received errata in the Oracle card reference to read, destroy a permanent, it can't be regenerated.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is not exile.
No. That was removed from game, I think.
Removed from game. Yeah.
Removed from the game.
Removed from the game.
Used to be exile, but now we just exile them.
Yeah.
So I was always, you know, you guys, I was just, maybe you have an opinion on this. I was wondering the other day, where do exiled cards go?
Heaven.
Okay.
I want to sing that now. Like, where do exile cards go?
Oh my God. Oh my God. We can sing about that on our musical episode.
You should. Amazing. You guys.
You guys, we're planning a musical episode. We're going to be like Buffy.
Can I do my MTG version of Anaconda?
Yes, absolutely.
Can I say dirty things here?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I was listening to the song and like I kept coming up with little tidbits, and I have to tell you a really embarrassing thing I did at the Community Cup. So so when I first heard Anaconda, the first thing I thought of was there's a line that goes, you know, it's bigger than a tower. And I was like, Urza, it's bigger than a tower. I ain't talking about Urza. And I was like, that's hot. And then I thought about it and I was like, by the way, what'd he say? He can tell I ain't missing no triggers. Like, that's one.
Yeah.
And then the most embarrassing one of all. So I was at the community cup and we were doing karaoke. And one of the people who came was Ryan Spain, who we love. Yes. He used to be on Limited Resources. He works for Magic now. And I don't know what came over me. I don't know if it was, I didn't drink that night. So I think I was just going purely on adrenaline. But so there's a line in the song where it goes, he tossed my salad like it's name romaine. And mind you, Ryan Spain is there with his wife, who is awesome. But I don't know what came over me. But so when I'm karaokeing, I get the urge to go, he tossed my salad like his name, Ryan Spain. And I remember the horrified looks of like, went too far, uh-oh. And now when I hear that song, I still hear that in my head. I will be on the bus to work. He tossed my salad like his name, Ryan Spain. And I'm like, oh my God. So that's my most embarrassing moment of telling Ryan Spain that he tossed my salad.
What is tossing a salad?
Oh, Maria.
What? Really? You didn't know what rickrolling was the other week, so okay. Don't get on my case about not knowing what tossing a salad is.
I'm not going to explain it to you.
Google it. Yeah. All right, fine. Google it.
Hey, everybody. It's time for just a standard corner.
Just your average everyday corner.
Just a normal corner, you guys. But this week, we're joined by Erin because she also played in the SCG Open this past weekend.
And I stood on a couple standard corners myself.
Yeah. There you go.
Yep.
Hey. Nice.
Gotta pay for them cards somehow. Those misses don't pay for themselves, girl.
Where are you working this evening? Oh, just the standard corner.
I can't tell you when I was thinking about investing in the modern, there were a couple times where I was like thinking about all the terrible things I would do to be able to pay for retirement going from like... Like I'm weighing the pros and cons. And
I hope it's not 10 cents gas station below.
You'd have to do a lot. You would have to suck a lot of suckers to be able to afford.
Oh, that's what it was. A 10 cent sucker. That's what it was. Okay.
You need a lot of 10 cent suckers.
So you played standard at this Open.
That's right. Erin, do you want to tell us a little bit about the deck that you're playing? Because I know it's not one of the main archetypes right now.
Sure. It actually came in. There was a variation of it that came in ninth place, which I was very happy to see.
Awesome.
And so the deck actually made its debut at the Pro Tour. Christian Siebold was playing it, and he called it Widisi, which revolves around Whip of Erebos and Sidisi Brew Tyrant and the synergy that they give each other.
And an awesome... Whatchamadoodle.
It is, but Frank Lepore did not like that I used it and made me promise never to use it again. So I can't call it what he's seen anymore.
Why? It's great.
What? That's a great portmanteau.
I thought it was too. But yeah, Frank was at him. He's like, you can't call it either. So now
Frank,
we're calling it like Sultai Graveyard.
What is Frank, the god of cart deck names?
Right. Well, Sidisi Whip, I guess, is the more common name for it.
Okay.
So
the
original version revolved around four Hornet Queens, four Sidisi, four Whip of Erebos, Stator Wayfinders. So you're casting Sidisi, you're filling your graveyard, and then you're reanimating things. So Hornet Queen, she normally costs seven, but you can whip her into play. And even after she leaves, her Hornets stay.
Awesome.
So there have been times I've also hard casted her and then recasted her with the whip. It's gross. Lifelink, nice. I think, is really good right now. But there's and then somebody else did really well with it at the GP last weekend, Eugene Wang. He did well with it. I think he came in like 23rd.
Yeah.
I think he top 32'd with it, and he was 8-1 for a while with it. Like he was on a streak with it.
Yeah.
And it's a very fun deck. But the problem is Sidisi is a very hard card to build around where, you know, you want to kind of, some people want to go all in on the graveyard. Some people think that that's not the answer. The matchup against Abzan is very tough because everything is so big. She's never going to get through, so she dies quickly.
Yeah.
So there's so many ways to do it. And the guy who came in ninth place, his version was a little more old school. Like he was using Night Howlers and Nemesis of Mortals, which some people had played with before rotation.
Yeah.
Which is just get big fatties out there. Don't really worry about whipping stuff. Just make them big.
Yeah.
So that was his approach to it. I like the Hornet Queen approach. And I think everyone agrees that the card is good, but they just don't know what to do with her.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're also at a point in the community where people just don't want to invest anymore. Like I hate to say it, but people don't want to work on decks anymore. They want a deck that's out of the box good. And I think if somebody or a couple of somebodies were to sit down and really test this and hammer it out, I think there's a tier one deck there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely a very powerful strategy. And I feel like before rotation, there was kind of that graveyard themed deck going on.
Yeah.
Which definitely had potential.
Yeah. But it had a terrible burn matchup. And that was part of the problem was burn
That's
was
fair.
A thing.
Yeah.
So you had your Lotleth Trolls, you had your Night Howlers, you had your Whips, and you had your Shadowborn Demons. But and the other problem was Desecration Demon was so big. And
yeah.
Shadowborn couldn't hit Desecration, so that was a dead card. Yeah. And it had a very bad burn matchup. So it's just got to find its right place in the meta, or you have to find the right build. Absolutely. And I think that's what we're dealing with right now, is nobody knows just how to use it.
Yeah. So that's pretty sweet. Also, I want to mention that you made a poem in your explanation. referring to Hornet Queen, you whip her into play, and then her hornets stay. So I think we should write that in italics. We'll put it, anytime that you write your deck name, you need to write that little quote
below. Yeah, I was trying to even come up with names for the deck, like you said, and like we had first come up with zombies, because it's zombies and bees. I love that. Bees in the Trap was a thing for a while.
Yep.
But then I realized like that could be seen the wrong way, and I was like, I don't want to offend anybody. So that was a thing. I was just trying to come up with these cool names for, like, We Three Queens for a while, and, you know, there's me and then the two queens. Yeah, so there's lots of fun ways you could do it.
We Three Queens.
That's really good.
That was maybe my favorite.
Haven't people been a little disappointed recently about what their decks can be called on coverage?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a lot of the old school fans who don't like, especially like in the Legacy events, like they get very offended when you say, you know, Sultai Delver. They're like, no, it's Bug. And there's this huge, they want the old terms, and they resent that it's being done. And yeah.
That's totally fair. I feel like on the one hand, everything from like now moving forward, I'm like, just call it by the new name. Who cares? Say the word.
It's that deep. Yeah.
Exactly. But I understand, like, if it's like, it feels weird to be like Jeskai Control when you're talking about blue, white, red, modern control. Because it's like that deck has been around for so long. Right. Why are you just going to go back and retroactively?
I tend to be more passionate when they get the archetypes wrong. So, like, you have somebody who is playing very clearly an aggro deck and you're like, this is mid range? No, it's not. You've got 37 creatures. This is not a mid range deck. And I get more upset about that.
Yeah. Or everyone who is super upset about what the Jeskai burn aggro tempo flyers deck should be called.
Yeah,
everyone was like, it's not really a tempo deck, it's just like a burn deck.
I actually think it's too intelligent to be called a burn deck. It's a very smart deck. I don't think it's nearly as face rolly as, you know, Lightning Strike and blah and blah and blah. No, there's a lot of lines of play there, and I like it. I have a lot of respect for that deck.
I agree.
Think about in the past some of the more famous decks, like if you thought about Aristocrats or whatever, like would you go back and call that by a different, you know, Are we going to see less creative names going forward? That's all I'm concerned about.
Well, I think it's just a matter of the fact that Aristocrats made sense. You know, there were clearly Aristocrats in that deck. You know, I'm trying to think of another deck that made sense. Merfolk, obviously there's Merfolk in it, you know, but there is a line, I think, when you get too cute and then it's just like, what are you doing? Like,
Yeah, totally. So what do you feel are some of the strengths of the deck that you played, or maybe some of the weaknesses?
I honestly feel like my only bad matchup was Abzan. I lost to it 3 times yesterday. They were very grindy games as well. There was actually a feature match where it was the ninth place deck. He was playing an Abzan deck. And between all the life gain, and especially if Abzan boards in a whip, you're never going to finish the game.
Oh, God.
I remember I played a game one at game day. I actually took a screenshot of it. The life pass. And how crammed with numbers it was, and that was just game one.
Oh,
75 to 42 to 65 to 92, and it's just insane. And neither one of you is really winning.
Yeah,
and that's very frustrating because you're just like, and Sultai sadly will deck itself because that's just what it does.
Yeah, because you're doing.
Yeah, it's very sad. So those, I feel good against Jeskai. I felt good against Mardu. Mono Red is a crapshoot, but you know they just get those god hands, and you can't really help that.
Yeah.
But other than that, I didn't feel like, you know, unprepared or anything. I didn't feel that. Good. You know, like that much at a disadvantage, but we've definitely got to fix the Abzan matchup, and I don't quite know how.
And Abzan is so much of the field right now.
Yeah.
Jesus H.
Yeah.
I don't know how many Abzan decks I played against yesterday, but it was a butt ton.
Yeah, and they're all different. Like, there's really no, like when Jund was big 2 years ago, there was very much a template for it where it had the four Thrag Tusk, the four Huntmasters, and, you know, these decks are all so different, which makes it so hard to board against them, and you think you're playing an Abzan aggro deck, so then you board against that, and then they board out everything and become a mid-range deck, or vice versa, and Jeskai's also very good at that. Like, these decks are very hard to attack, which some people think is great. Like, oh, it's a sign of a healthy format, but it's also really hard to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, well, so you were playing Widisi.
Widisi.
I'm going to call that. I also played the standard open yesterday, and I was playing Jeskai Ascendancy combo.
Ooh. You madman.
Which was a hell of a lot of fun, you guys. I have to say, I think that there are still, kind of like what you were saying, where people I forget the phrasing that you used exactly, but like people aren't like exploring. People want something that's out of the box mm-hmm. good. And Ascendancy Combo is definitely not out of the box good right now. Mm-hmm. I spent a week preparing for this, literally just by goldfishing, because I was trying to figure out, you know, there's so many variations of Ascendancy Combo right now. Channel Fireball went into the Pro Tour with one that was more focused on, it had, you know, Tygum's Schemings. And some Treasure Cruises and Dig Through Times in addition to the combo. And then there was like Li Shitian's version, which had Nissa World Waker and the Dragon Mantles instead, and like a transformative sideboard. And so it was sort of, it's very much one of those things where I feel like part of the reason why a lot of people aren't playing it right now is because the best version of the deck definitely has not been discovered yep. yet by a long shot. So my own personal opinion after testing some this past week is I do think it's correct to be playing the Dragon Mantles over Tygum's Scheming. Tygum's Scheming is just a shitty Magic card, you guys. It's just bad.
I played Delvin, I wouldn't even play it.
No, it's really bad. And the most important way that it's bad in this deck is that once you get your Ascendancy combo going off, you need cards in hand to loot. Mm-hmm. And Tygum's Scheming is straight up card disadvantage. I get that maybe I could put cards in my graveyard for a Treasure Cruise or a Dig Through Time, and I get that maybe it would help me find my combo pieces, but the straight up fact that it's card disadvantage means that if you're trying to go off but you don't have cards in hand to loot with, like, you're just screwed.
Yeah.
That's just really bad news. So I do feel like Dragon Mantles are correct. I still don't know what the answer is to the Voyaging Satyr Kiora's follower question. And I feel like in part because that's because the mana base is maybe the most incorrect thing right mm-hmm. now. I was more on an older version of the mana base because I couldn't get all of the Windswept Heath the Channel Fireball was playing.
Oh, I could have loaned you them. I had a playset.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Not being made of money, I did not have them before now.
Have you ever put out the call before?
Yeah, I usually okay. do. Mm-hmm. But it was like coming up, and I was okay. just like,
have you put you out what? The call?
I shine the bat signal.
Yeah, that is one of the perks of having, you know, a successful really anything is you can really just ask and you'd be surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a great, like the store that we go here to here, people are usually very willing. But I was so trying to figure out the other things that I left the mana base for last, which was a little bit of a mistake because there were definitely two games that I lost yesterday straight up to my mana base. I just never drew white. Like, I never had white, and I had two ascendancies in hand, and I was like, well, this deck sure would be working right now if I could cast this card.
How did that make you feel? So, you know, like, we talked yesterday about how it's a lot like Storm, where there are a lot mm-hmm. of, there are times where you lose, and it's solely your fault. And not you, Megan, but, like, yeah. you know, a lot of times with decks, you can blame variance, you can blame, you know, oh, you know, this card happened, or this something happened, or they boarded in the right thing against me, but it seems like one of those decks where it can be your fault. Like, how does that
yeah.
feel?
I would say, for me, I like that a lot more
yeah.
than ascribing it to, like, variance or something. Because then I feel it's like, oh, then all I need to do is figure out what I'm going to change.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, on the one hand, it's like, yep, that was definitely my fault. But on the bright side, that means that I can fix it.
Sure.
And I think one of the best things that's going to happen for this deck is figuring out the best mana base. Mm-hmm. Because I think Voyaging Satyrs are ideal. But Kiora's followers are good if you have a Caryatid in play and you don't have all of the right colors of lands, because then you can use it to untap your Caryatid. Mm-hmm. But it is harder to cast on its own. Like, individually, Kiora's follower does cast, cost blue-green.
No. How do you determine that you're going to stick with the deck? Because I have this really bad habit of not doing well in an event and going, I'm done. And then I get really mad and I throw it away. And then it gets very tug of war, because then I see it. So after yesterday, I was ready to write off the deck.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm done. I'm tired of this. This is not working. But then totally. I see somebody go ninth with it. And I'm like, well, if he can do it, why can't I? And it turns into this really vicious cycle of play it because somebody else is doing well and I happen to enjoy it. Do terrible. Somebody else does well and I pick it up again. And I'm a bit of a commitment phobe like that.
Yeah. I would say for me, it's like, as weird as the sound, but it's just like, how much joy do I get out mm-hmm. of it? I used to play, like, I started playing Standard kind of right after Pro Tour Theros. Mm-hmm. I watched that one. I was like, Mono Blue looks fun. I'll play that. And I built that deck, and I had, like, a pretty good time with it. And it was probably one of the most successful standard decks that I've ever played. Like, I was the most successful with that, as I've been with anything. But eventually I transferred over to Sphinx's Revelation control, like straight blue-white control, just because the joy that I felt in casting a Sphinx's Revelation was just, like, was so much better than anything that I felt when I was playing mono-blue. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm going to stick with Ascendancy combo because, I mean, this is going to sound like I have an issue, and maybe I do. But, like, the high that I got off of comboing off yesterday mm-hmm. was just, it's like, that's the feeling that I'm looking for. Whether I win or not, I'm looking for, like, that like, really intense, just, like, fuck yeah experience.
How does your opponents feel about it, like, watching you go off?
Oh, my God.
Story time!
Well, you were around for one of the most unfortunate experiences. So I'll preface this, actually, because you had mentioned this before we started. I feel like right now one of my biggest barriers to playing this deck is my own personal anxiety. Like, I have social anxiety around people that I don't know.
I would never guess. Like, I honestly wouldn't.
It's like, it's hard to describe, but I just get, like, I get nervous. Mm-hmm. And especially when I'm sitting down to play someone, I feel very attuned to their attitude. So if someone's being very negative, then I pick up on that very heavily, and it makes me kind of have a panic attack.
Oh, no.
So yesterday, I will say that for every unkind person, there were two kind people around.
So you had more than one negative experience yesterday?
No, there were like a couple of people who were very grumpy about it.
Okay.
There was the one guy who I played at the end of the day. And I will say this, if you're going to be mean to somebody, don't wear a shirt from a game store that you're helping promote.
Oh, God.
I won't name the store, but I will say that I'm not going to go there.
I played somebody from that store my last round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this guy was just, the thing about the combo deck is once you demonstrate a loop, right, you can set up a loop with your Mana Dork, Ascendancies, and Briber's Purse, and Retraction Helix. So I'd set this up, and once you demonstrate the loop of how each time you go through the action, you're generating a mana, and you're generating two loot triggers, you don't have to physically tap your guy, bounce the purse. You don't have to go through the actions mm-hmm. to perform adding mana and looting through your deck. So I showed him, this is the second game. I'd already won the first one. Mm-hmm. I show him the loop and I'm like, okay, I'm going to move through the conclusions of the loop. Like, and if you interrupt it, like, then you just announce when you're going to interrupt it mm-hmm. act. And he was just like, no, I want to see you do it. And I was like, being the very flusterable person that I am, I was like, okay. And I went through it one more time. And then I was just like, and because it involved a Voyaging Satyr, so I was actually having to physically untap a land.
Yeah.
It was taking for fucking ever. So I did it one more time. And I was like, do you know what? I'm going to call a judge over because I am by rules allowed to like show you this loop.
And it was also what, round 9?
Yeah,
by it was then, like, you're all late. Tired. Yeah.
Everybody's exhausted. God. At this point, I'm shaking because this guy is so visibly mad at me. So he's like, fine. So I call a judge over and I like give a very terrible, flustered explanation of what's going on. And the judge is essentially just like, yes, mm-hmm. you are allowed to do that. So, you know, I do the loots. I get to my Nissa. I cast Nissa multiple times. And I, like, show the guy what's going on. And he asks me many angry questions like, wait, how is that land that's... Because I was making my lands into guys. And then they untap with Ascendancy because they're dudes now. And he was like, wait, how are those lands untapping if you're using Voyaging Satyr to untap this mana land? And I was like, no, they're... Like, it's Ascendancy is untapping them. He's like, oh, fine. Like, I don't even remember exactly what he said to me. He's like, I've seen enough of this. And he just, like, angrily gathers up his cards. And at the end he's just like, yeah, that's a really great way to make friends,
before he that's storms my away
and then I chimed in with, well, so is your attitude.
And thank you for that, because I was not gonna say anything. I was just like, ah.
But, you know, I do want to say, for any new players listening,
he wanted to make friends, Megan. That's all he wanted.
That's why he's playing Abzan, clearly. Jesus.
I know.
You know, I do want to say, though, for any new players, I think there are times where it is appropriate to make them play it out. So, for example, Modern especially. I know Scapeshift is one of those cards where people will go, Scapeshift? and expect you to know. You're going to pull up them six lands. You're going to get your Valakut. You're going to do your 18 damage to me, and that's it. I'm not just going to do that. Splinter Twin, too. I know some people will, you know, there are times I think it's appropriate to do that, but when there's a loop, like you said, you've already demonstrated once, twice, maybe three times, and you didn't respond the first two times, you know?
Yeah.
What, I know you don't have anything. Let this happen.
Exactly. And it's like, like obviously when you're playing someone, they do always have to explain it. Yeah. The first time I played Modern was at a Grand Prix, and I had no clue. Mm-hmm. I had no clue what was happening. And I played a Splinter Twin matchup, and the guy very kindly, like got out his two pieces, and he was like, do you know this, like, do you know this combo, I think is what he said, or like, do you know this loop? And I was like, no. And he explained it to me. He's like, do this, like, untap my guy, make a new dude, and untaps my guy, make a new dude, attack you with 1,000 guys. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm not gonna make you do that 1,000 times, because I understand. Yeah. We both understand what's going on.
And also, just to clarify too, there's also nothing wrong with asking. It's how you do it. Like, the guy's not a jerk because he asked you. It's how he did it. Like, you can say, you know, wait, hold on, like, what does this do? You know, like, you can word it a certain way where you're not shitty, and it's how he worded it, it's how he said it. You know, for anyone listening, you're always allowed to ask, but don't ask like that.
Yeah, and I definitely had multiple people during the day who were just like, okay, like, if you can show me how you're gonna kill me, then I'll concede. And it's like, okay, yeah, I'll show you, like,
you know, I don't want to be shot in the back of the head before I see the gun.
But I'm showing you the gun,
and then I'm fine. Yeah, then go ahead.
Here's the gun.
Here's this ninja star. It's going between your eyes. Oh, thank you.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that's fine.
We'll assume that I'm dead.
Here is this knitting needles. I'm going to put it through your throat. Great.
Great. Wonderful.
Great. Here's this piano. I'm going to drop it on your head.
Yeah. I do have to say, though, like I said, that was my biggest negative experience. I had a couple of other people who just got a little, like, grumpy once it happened. But for every mean person, like, obviously you were so nice to chime in against that guy when I would have just let him walk away. Because, yeah, I was like, oh. But then, like, the two people, after you left, the two guys who had been sitting next to us, like, the one guy was very nice. He was like, oh, I'd never seen that Nissa kill. That was really cool. And they were just like, that was a lot of, like, that looked really nice. I was like, that looked like a lot of fun. I was like, thank you.
I tend to be pretty forgiving of people because I have my own tilting problems. And Lord knows I was not nice to a couple people yesterday, which I admit. And I always think it's really fascinating. Like, I think, you know, I don't want to go into cheating too much, but I think it's one of those things where it's always fascinating to know, like, what drives people. And I think it's very easy to, and I don't know the story behind your guy in question, but it's always very easy to just say they were an ass, they were grumpy. But for my tilt especially, the times that I was not happy yesterday, it was feelings of helplessness. Yeah. It wasn't that I didn't like you. It wasn't that I didn't like your deck. It was I was in a situation where I had no answers. And my way of coping and being vulnerable was lashing out.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that makes it okay. I was in the wrong. But I always find it really fascinating, like, what makes people respond like that. So I would be curious to know, what about your opponent made him deal with it that way? Like, was it the, you know, the unexpectedness? Was it the fact that he felt inferior? I'm very fascinated by, like, the psychology of it.
Tight underwear.
Right?
And I definitely feel like when you're, like, playing combo, obviously you're going to make some people unhappy.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's not...
And some people like that. They like that about the deck.
Yeah, it's like, it's not a fair strategy, and I understand that, but it's like, I pick my deck for the joy that it gives me. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm not raining on your parade because you're playing four Siege Rhinos because it's the best card. It's like, do you know what? I hate Siege Rhino. Yeah. I fucking hate that card. But do you know what? If you're playing it, I'm not going to get mad at you. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
So don't get mad at me because I get twisted joy out of a combo. So, and I feel like part of it, I don't know. I never know how much of it is, like, the fact that I'm very chatty and nice beforehand. Because we had totally been having, like, a funny, chatty, nice conversation before we started playing.
Well, I hate to say it, too, but there are still those guys out there that losing to a woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Like, they might be fine losing to it anyway, normally, but, oh, you lost. Not only did you lose to a combo deck, which some people find offensive, you lost to a girl who played a combo deck. And there are still those attitudes.
Who was being very, I feel like sometimes people are like, oh, you're just here for the social aspect because I'm being very friendly. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, I'm here, like, I believe in being nice and being friendly, but I'm also here to sit down and kick your ass.
I will say, in terms of women, yesterday, I saw another trans woman there. My friend Feline was there, and I was there, and then there were women in general playing. We had a lady head judge.
Yeah.
I was very happy with the feminine
Definitely.
Aspect of that. Like, we were representing a little bit there. That was good.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. Yeah. So anyways, you guys, moral of that story, don't be dicks.
Yeah, we did a whole episode about how not to be a dick.
I think we did. I wrote an article that? Once
yeah.
on how not to be a dick.
You can go to magicktheamateuring.com and look at our blog post. You can find Megan's article.
Are there dicks on the post?
Oh. We have some dick pics.
Okay. I will go right now.
We have dick pics, but they're Easter eggs, so it's going to be tough to find, but they're there.
Yeah, but they're there. All right, Maria said they are. She's the one who handles our blog, so I don't know.
If you are worried that you may be a dick, go and read this article. It'll tell you once and for all.
But overall, so Erin, do you think you're going to keep playing Sidisi Whip?
You know, I talked about that vicious cycle, and I don't have any standard events to go to. Like, I'd been playing Modern, you know, before Cons came out, and I was very happy with it. And really, the only reason I was playing Standard was because I wanted to see what the new environment was like. And also, there was Game Day, there was this, there was a Winna Box, Winna Black Lotus that was happening locally. Mm-hmm. So I had reasons to play Standard, but I don't foresee any Standard events happening in the near future, so I think I'm just going to go back to Modern.
All
right. If something else comes up, though, I do... Like I said, I do believe that there is potential in Sidisi. I would be playing Sultai Planeswalkers if I go back to Standard. I feel it's safer. Shaheen Sarwani's been doing a lot of work on it, and that's where I feel I would go next.
Nice.
Adrian Sullivan had a blue control deck, so I might do that too. But I just feel like I need something safer.
As a person who hates Siege Rhinos, I have to say I very much appreciate that you are not playing Siege Rhinos.
Yeah, no. I'm not really one to hop on bandwagons, and there's too many people playing it. And especially if you're going to play a popular deck, you have to enjoy the mirror match.
Yeah.
And I loved Mono Black Devotion for a time, but the mirror was so painful. And, you know, now that I'm playing, you know, rock decks in Modern, I'm okay with a rock mirror. I love a Jund mirror. I think that's great. You got to be willing to like a mirror, I think. And especially when you're playing a popular deck, I don't want to whack off against Siege Rhinos. Like,
no way.
Like when you watch an Abzan mirror, it pretty much feels like, since we're talking about dirty references, watching an Abzan mirror is sort of like watching two guys sword fight. There are a lot easier ways to get there than what you're doing. You don't have to do this. You can just move it to the and that's what it feels like, just rubbing the swords. And it's like, can one of you just get off already? Like, that's how it feels. I don't want to participate in that.
It's totally true.
Absolutely.
That is what it is.
Siege Rhino. biggest asshole out there.
So while we have the great gift of Erin here at our slumber party, we thought we would take this moment to ask you a few questions.
Sure.
Since you do an interview podcast, we're going to turn the tables, as it were.
Oh, my Lord.
On you.
It's like a lazy Susan.
Yes.
Or if you go to Popeyes, I don't know if you go to Popeyes, their drive-thru, they have the dish. Have you seen the dish?
No, I've never
been. So if you pay at a Popeyes, there's a dish and there's glass. So the glass, and then it rotates. So you put your money in the dish.
Oh, sure.
And then you rotate, and then they get the dish.
Why
and then they take your money.
Why is there this weird rotating dish?
I don't know. It might be that Popeyes are sometimes in bad neighborhoods, maybe.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Maybe that's an issue. I don't know. But and then they put the money in the dish, and then they rotate it around. And it's almost like a bank transaction.
Wow.
Like it's freak, yeah.
Well, this is a question on my mind. You were recently part of the Community Cup.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what that was like. What was that experience like for you?
Man, you know, I've talked about this before. It was so positive. It was more positive than I thought it would be. I was a last minute addition. I don't know if you know how I was added, but I was not on the original team. And then somebody had to leave for personal reasons and I was invited. And I went into it with certain preconceptions. Like, there were people I was convinced I wasn't going to get along with. I assumed it was going to be a lot more business. Like, I thought it was going to be like 75% business. And then if we happen to have fun, that would be great. And it was the opposite. It was wholly positive. There was never any drama. There was never any tension. I got along with everybody. You know, I cried my last day. Like, I didn't want to go home. I remember the last night there, if I can tell you about it. So you have to understand that we spent every moment together.
Oh,
for
yeah.
4 days, we did everything together. And even the first day alone, the first day, we didn't even play any Magic. It was, we went on a tour. We went to a museum. We went to Card Kingdom. And I think when you spend that much time with anybody, you're going to get attached. Yeah. And, you know, breakfast, 6 hours of play, dinner, after dinner draft, you know, every moment was spent together. And I remember the last day we got done and Wizards took us out to dinner and Helene gave this really lovely speech about how they enjoyed our teamwork and our team spirit. And we went back to the hotel and we played Frank's Cube because he brought his cube. And one by one, people said their goodbyes. So Paul had to leave early in the morning and he hugged everybody. And then Mariah left and then I left. And I walked, as I was walking to the elevator, I took a look back and they were all playing and they didn't see me. And I remembered thinking, I'm going to come downstairs for breakfast tomorrow and they're not going to be here. And we're not going to walk to WOTC together because it was a cul-de-sac. So we'd walk to WOTC. And, you know, what am I going to do? Like, they're not going to be here. And I started to cry. And even for a couple weeks after, I would get very sad. Like, I really missed these people. And I called one of my girlfriends that night as I was packing, and I did the subtitle crying, where she's like, honey, what's wrong? And I was like, I was a mess. I was very, very sad. And even now, we still have our Facebook group open from our community cup. We still find reasons to tweet each other or support each other. Like, I know Bjorn's trying to organize, like, a Swedish cup of some form. And he was like, hey, can I get retweets from my community cup friends? And we all did. And Scotty just started a stream. We're all supporting him. And we really did sort of make these new friends. And it was just our little piece of history. And no matter what I do, I've made my mark. And no matter if I quit the show tomorrow or if I never win a GP, that's something I've done. And it was just, I just did not expect that. I thought it was going to be 4 days of magic and I'd go home. I didn't expect to make great new friends. And I didn't expect to have my following blow up the way that it did. And just to make that impact, it was amazing.
Aw, that's so awesome.
That's really good. Really good story.
So I want to go back in time a little bit.
Sure.
Flashback. What inspired you to start doing the deck tees in the first place?
Well, I was a blogger. I played World of Warcraft for 5 years, and I blogged for a long time. And when I quit WoW to come back to Magic, my first response was start a blog. But it's very hard to be a Magic blogger unless you're under one of the big sites. Like, unless you're under Star City or TCG Player, nobody knows who you are. And more importantly, there's also sort of a meritocracy involved in Magic, where even if you were to strike out on your own, they're going to ask, are you good at the game? Do you know anybody? And if you're a nobody, like, I hate to say that word, no one's really going to read you. You know, you haven't won anything. The odds of you being seen are very small. So I still wanted to contribute something creatively. I don't know how to play a game without an outlet like that. Like, I don't know if I could just play Magic and not be a blogger or not be involved somehow. And I was like, well, we'll start a podcast. I'm like, that's an easy way to do it. And I'd podcasted a little bit before. And one of the things I always say, and we've talked about this before, is if you're going to start something like that, you've got to bring something new to the table.
Yeah.
So I was like, what's nobody doing right now? And there was a WoW show I used to listen to called The Mana Cooler, which is still around. And he would do these little, like, bite-sized shows, like 10-minute shows, 15-minute shows. And he would just talk about, like, his guild bank. He'd be like, I put some herbs in my guild bank, and that's an episode. Or he'd be like, I leveled my jewel crafting, and that's a 7-minute show. And I was like, that's a really novel concept. So I started doing that, and I would do, like, my first two-headed giant and my first draft and these little bite-sized shows. And then I started meeting people, and I started meeting people from Gathering Magic. And around, like, my 20th episode, I started having people on, and people responded really well to that, and they were like, you're really good at this. And it just happened so fast where, you know, especially if you're a new show, I really kind of understood networking. So, like, you have somebody on your show who has 200 followers. They then retweet your show to those 200. One of them retweets it, and it just happened so fast where before I knew it, I was having Darwin Castle on the show. And then after that, it became Brian Kibler came on the show. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it just all happened really quickly. And then you have Kai Buddha on the show, and you've got Finkel on the show. And I think what people also don't understand is they're down to do it. I've never had to, like, sell these guys on the concept. It's literally me going, hi, I'm Aaron Campbell. I have this show. Would you like to join me? Yes. They're so down to do it. I don't have, like, a secret. And before I knew it, it just one thing led to another, and I'm here. So
yay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Do you have a favorite moment from your show?
I'd like to say that every one of my episodes, everyone has what I call a gem.
Yeah.
And I can pick that out when I'm editing. And there's always at least one sentence or one moment in every show where I feel like that's it. And I can sort of point to that furiously and be like, that's the gem. And or where I can feel like they've said something that they will never say anywhere else. And I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
But I feel like all my shows have just that one moment, maybe two. But
this is a question I like to ask a lot of Magic players. And it's, what does the game bring to your life that you wouldn't have without it? I mean, obviously it's brought you this show, which is incredible. I don't know, what do you get out of playing the game?
Love. You know, people always ask you, like, you know, I don't know how many subscribers I have. I don't keep track of my downloads. I don't do any of that. And the metric that I use to determine how well the show is doing is the love. You know, when people stop me at events and want to hug me, or they want to tell me they love the show or they love me, I didn't really have that growing up. Like, I was a queer kid. I didn't know who I was. You know, I was bullied. I was a nerd. I didn't have a lot of friends. So to be in a situation where I'm sort of cool and to have people say, I love what you do, I get a lot of positivity from this. And, you know, the retweet and people emailing me, and I just started selling my playmats. I've had 3 people in 4 countries that are willing to pay $20 in shipping just to have one of my mats. What do you say to that, you know? Or just to be able to, I'm trans, and have other trans girls or even trans boys email me and say, I went to my first event and didn't care what I looked like because of you. Or, you know, having people email me and say, I think I have somebody... I had one of my listeners actually email me the other day and say that his daughter came out as trans. She's now a trans boy. What do I do? Aaron, help me with this. Like, ooh, you know?
Wow.
And to be able to do things with Lady Planeswalkers and to be invited to weddings from people I've never met before, and really just the love. And I tell people that when the love stops, I'll stop doing the show. But as long as I get the feedback that I get and the friends that I get, I'll keep going, because that's really what I'm in it for.
That's awesome.
Such a good answer.
I know. So I guess, okay, so I'll go all job interviewer on you.
Ooh, spill that tea, girl.
If there was one, I'm a British, you're interviewing for a British
job.
British job.
If I should ask you one question, which I haven't asked you yet, what question should I ask
you? Has somebody asked you that in an interview?
What? Yeah.
Really?
You've never been asked that?
No.
I think it's an excellent interview question.
It's a bit of a poke there. Yeah. I'll answer anything. So I don't get interviewed enough, so I'm fine. So.
Oh, snap.
You didn't even have a question to follow it up with.
I know. I was asking, like, if there was something that you were like, man, I wish people would ask me this.
No, if I mean, I'm pretty fair game. Like, I'll tell you anything.
How did you get your steak last night?
I had a New York strip steak, and it was medium.
Oh, nice.
And I had loaded mashed potatoes with it.
Oh, God.
Nice. And I sat next to couples on either side of me that were May-December romances.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Older men, younger women.
That means May-December.
Yeah. You've never heard that phrase before?
No.
Yeah, it's a common phrase.
So many things.
May-December romances. Yeah. We talked a little bit earlier about, like, how sometimes when you as a woman beat a man, it can be a little bit, like, they can be a little bit
salty.
Yeah. Salty. There we go. That's a good word. How do you feel the magic community interacts with you, both as a woman and as a trans person?
I mean, I've been really, really lucky, and I definitely feel like my story is the exception, because I belong to several Facebook groups where there are, you know, still horror stories and things like that happening. I do believe, and I hope I don't sound too incendiary by saying this, but I think that as a whole, the guys do want women there. They really do. Where I think the problem comes is when the women start doing well. And I mean that. I truly mean that.
No, I get it.
I don't disagree.
For example, there was one of my local game stores had an F&M for a while, and they had dubbed it a ladies' night F&M, and it was their attempt to get more women in the store. Mm-hmm. And their F&M had, I think, a $6 entry fee at the time. You would get a pack just for playing, standard legal pack, and their prize payout was really good. So you could go 4-0 and win 15 packs.
Holy sweet.
And you could go like 3-1 and leave with 9 packs. So still, you could do quite well. And there were maybe 2 or 3 of us that started showing up for it. And I'll admit that at the time, I was quite good at the deck. I had a deck that I liked, and I was winning pretty frequently. But I didn't start out that way. And for the first couple weeks it happened, the guys were like, this is awesome. We're going to bring all these women here. It's going to be game changing. Then all of a sudden, when we started winning packs, it became a problem. And it became, she didn't pay an entry fee. And she won all these packs. She won 10 packs for not paying anything. And it's like, but I earned this. Like, it was a competitive store, too. It wasn't like it was a store full of Johnnies. I worked. I sideboarded correctly. I won by the skin of my teeth. I earned these packs. And within a couple of months, this was right around the time that Innistrad was rotating.
Yeah.
I had played the Rock deck at that time. And I remember I had stopped playing a couple weeks before because I was just tired of the format. I was tired of Snapcasters and Thrike Tests and all that shit. And so I took a couple weeks off, and I came back. And I remember going, Sal, I'm here for Ladies F&M. And he's like, Aaron, we canceled that. We don't do that anymore.
What?
And I was like, why do you not do that? Because people complained. The owner was fine with it. He had no problem with it. But there were enough dudes that complained that a woman was winning their packs that it became a problem. And you sort of see that on the competitive stage, too. It's like, you know, if they see a girl who they perceive to be, you know, a stupid girl. You know, I'm not saying that literally. I'm doing my little air quotes. But, you know, they see maybe a blonde girl with, like, an anime box. And maybe she's not very good yet. You know, they have no problem with her. They're fine with her being 0-4. She's not hurting anybody. Once you start going 6-1, once you're taking their pro points and you're taking their monies, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
You often, I think, can see the switch when you sit down to play a guy.
Yeah.
And they think that you're not a threat, right?
Yeah.
And you begin to play them and they realize, wait a second.
Yeah.
She actually can play.
There was a guy, I told you this story yesterday. I was at a PTQ, one of the last modern PTQs that happened this year. And the guy came up to me. It was so cheesy. He comes up to me and he looks at his match slip and he goes to sit down and he goes, oh, they screwed up my name on here. And I was like, oh my gosh, like we should get that fixed. Do you want to take a minute? And he goes, I'm Jack Faden, Thief of the Multiverse. And he goes to shake my hand.
Oh, my God.
And I literally looked at him like, ew. And once he saw that I wasn't impressed, his whole mood changed. So, like, he went into it with this charming jester appeal. And then the minute we sat down, it was, how are you casting that? Where's your mana from? What are you targeting? How are you targeting that? Completely changed. Yeah. Had I got along with it, like, had I been like, ooh, Dak Faden, I get a feeling the game would have gone totally differently.
Yeah.
I can't believe somebody actually did that.
Yeah. And that round actually got really ugly. We both ended up calling the judge on each other because we both just got very nasty to each other. And I was over his bullshit. And he tried he tried pinning all these things on me like, she can't tap that. And I was like, Blood Moon makes red. Violin Alpers takes red. Get off my dick. Like,
judge, my Dak opponent says he's Dak Faden, both of his hands.
But that's just like I said, you know. And then there's the awful term, the girlfriend bracket, you know, where you know, like I said, they will look at the low, you know, the lower tables in sort of like an adorable fashion, like, oh, look at the girlfriend bracket. But once you're, it totally changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I do think, and I also think too that it's you know, and I don't know if it's necessarily an excuse, but like I think they just don't know what to do. Like, you know, like they don't know how to handle it. And I'm not saying that makes it okay, but you know, so that's why I'm all about the Lady Planeswalkers and educating and just highlighting women. If I can have them on my show, yes. And just trying to make it so it's not a thing anymore. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would just like to be a human being who plays magic.
Mm.
Yeah. That's where I'd like to get to.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what's kind of nice about Magic Online.
Yeah, yep,
absolutely. Like, honestly, I have actually been sitting at my computer thinking that exact thing before.
Are you still, you had the great name, wasn't it?
Ice Cream Socialist?
There was another one.
That's Maria.
I'm Horny Unicorny. Yeah, and the funny thing is, too, is when I play, I'm sure people don't think I'm a girl.
Yeah.
And so, like, they'll say things about my username and stuff, and it's just like, you would definitely not say that if we were in real life. Buddy.
I guess it's what highlights the difference that there is still, like, in real life magic, there is a difference in the way that women are treated, because, like, I feel so comfortable online, despite all the bugs in Magic Online. It's so nice to just be like, do you know what, if you're angry, it has nothing to do with my gender, it has everything to do with just, like, you being pissed off, or, like, you getting mana screwed, or me drawing really well.
Yeah.
And, like, it's really nice to not feel that at all. Just to be, like, so relieved. It's like, this has nothing to do with my personal identity. Mm-hmm. And it has everything to do with just, like, the game of magic. Or your personality. Whatever.
It's also possible to feel the opposite, where people will root for you just because you're a woman.
Yeah.
And I get that. Like, I get that they really want to see it so bad, that they want the change to happen. Like, I know I was guilty of it with my friend Jamie. And when she started doing really well at GP Chicago, I was really, really rooting hard for her. And one of my friend Adrienne, she had messaged me privately and she was like, you know, don't forget that she's a good player who happens to be a woman. And I see that sometimes. There are people who will cheer for them and it's like, do you know why you're cheering for her? Because she's a woman. And it's like,
well, she's also really good at magic.
Yeah, so it's very tough to find that balance where you definitely want to acknowledge it. Like, you don't want to brush it under the rug because it is a moment. Like, I know when Melissa top-aided the Pro Tour, that was huge. It had never been done before. So, you know, you want to give them their due while still also acknowledging the talent and the skill and the hard work that went into it.
Thank you for doing a little interview segment with
Thank
us.
Thank you. I'm happy. I'm just happy to be here. Like, I love your show. I've said it before. I think you guys are really doing what nobody else is doing right now in a way that nobody else is doing it, which is what you're supposed to do when you start a show. And I'm all for you guys.
Aw, thank you. So, listeners, we hope you appreciate what we do. If you don't, I'm not sure why you're listening.
Yeah, you should. You should.
So, Erin, if people want to check out your show, where can they find you?
Well, my home base is gatheringmagic.com. The show comes out every Monday with the exception of this week, which I think the show's going to, you'll release this next week.
Yes.
Yeah, my show will be out on Tuesday because I have a Commander preview card.
That's awesome.
Which is insane. Ooh. Yeah, you don't even want to know like what's going into this. But so I have to release my show on Tuesday, which is weird for me. But normally it comes out every Monday. iTunes, Stitcher Radio. I'm on Twitter, very active on Twitter. The show is on Twitter, at the Deck Tees. I finally have a show exclusive email, thedecktees@gmail.com. Playmats are for sale, $20 a pop. They're awesome.
They are. They're very cool.
I sign them for a buck. I'm cheap. and that's about it. So just happy to be here. I didn't even want to, I have to say, I have been waiving the autograph fee for my overseas band. So okay. Like I had the guy from Denmark. He was already paying $20 to $25 just for shipping. I was like, all right, you get a free autograph. I'm not going to charge you an extra dollar for that. So
nice.
Fabulous. If you out there in listener land want to know how to get us, well, you already found us once, so good job. If you somehow get amnesia and listen to this show, there could be a circumstance. You can find us on iTunes. We're on Stitcher as well. MagicTheAmaturing.com as well as TheMeatery.org. Send us an email at MagicTheAmaturing@gmail.com or tweet at MTAcast.
Mm-hmm. You can find us online. As we mentioned before, I am Ice Cream Socialist.
I'm Horny_Unicorny.
You're making me want to like change my name to like Trana Winter or something.
That would be good. Amazing. That's
one of my good. Work, I don't know, one of my coworkers had made a comment the other day. We were at work and I was in a meeting and it was a very tense meeting. And I was coming off of the high of owning somebody in a meeting. And I was like, you know, when I shoot to kill, I never miss. And she goes, you're like Tranny Oakley. And I started thinking about it and I was like, oh my God, I totally want to write my book and call it Trying to Get Your Gun. That'd be so awesome. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. That's so good.
I would read that.
Speaking of Trana Wintour, is that it?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you have to. No. Like, you got to handle your business.
Exactly. Yeah. Have you ever watched the September issue?
Yes, I actually own it.
Oh, man.
Love it.
It's so good. I love Andre Leon Talley. He's my favorite.
He is, but I really feel like Grace kind of stole the show there.
Yeah, she's... Oh, that I feel so bad for her sometimes when you watch that.
Did you know that she was the inspiration for, did you ever watch American Horror Story?
No.
Okay, last season they had a character named Myrtle Snow, who was stole the show, Frances Conroy. She was based off of Grace.
That's crazy.
I kind of wanted to be her for Halloween. Like, I have the big red hair.
Yeah.
And there was a little part of me that wanted to be like, don't be a hater, dear. Just be really old and English.
What are we all being for Halloween?
Oh, you guys, I think I want to be Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
RBG.
Awesome. Oh my God.
I really do it. The other day. I have to figure out how to do a top knot.
It's either that or you need to be Sphinx's Revelation.
I love that she's hip to everything. Like if you read it, she's very aware of her online image and she actually has t-shirts with that. And I love that she's so hip to that. Like you get some people who are very far removed and like, what is a Tumblr? And what is this? And hell no, she's in on the joke. She thinks it's great. That's awesome.
Exactly.
Megan, please be this.
I love the most recent picture of the Justices. There's a bunch of like big dudes and then you can't even see their chairs. And then RBG, it's like mostly chair and she's just such a tiny little lady sitting in it. She's just like this little tiny like glasses, like top knot sitting in her chair.
I'm going as a sultry cop.
Oh, nice.
I decided I'm going to be Officer Goodbody. And it's going to be amazing. Like, you have the right to remain silent, but not the ability. And it'll be all like... Anything you say can and will be used against you in my bedroom. It's going to be very, very vacant. It's like a onesie. There's like a onesie and it has like a little black tie and like the aviator glasses and these, it's like a onesie. So it goes like to here.
Cute.
Got to hide the bubble gum for that. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. Like a little pin. Cavity searches for all.
I'm going to be Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah.
Oh, you'd be great.
That's a good one.
I love that show so much as
Where
a kid.
In the world is Carmen Sandiego?
I actually discovered on YouTube a slew of those episodes.
Oh, yeah.
They're so good. Yeah. They hold up. And those questions, not easy.
No, those kids are smart.
See, I used to do that. I was a really big geography buff when I was a kid, and I used to get so mad at that show because I knew the answers and the kids didn't. I was like, I should be on that show. And I remember being really angry.
They gotta bring that show back. Skips
across the
of all the things to reboot, like, yes, reboot Carolina. That.
She's a sticky finger filter from Berlin down to Belize. She'll take you on a ride on the slow boat to China. I said, where in the world is
Carmen Sandiego?
I'm the bass. That's awesome.